This is an AMI podcast.
Are you ready?
Go. Let's go.
From AMI Central.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way.
36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot.
Is this the dagger? The neutral zone.
Oh, score! Oh, my God!
This is as good as it gets.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Rock Richardson.
The beautiful thing about this show is that we're all friends. And sometimes we have to clarify things in each script because some ways that I write things, it works in my head. But then when others read it, they go, but what about this? And then I go, yeah, that works out. So just the example for today, we're going to have Patrick Anderson joining us, who is a five-time Paralympian in the sport of wheelchair basketball. And one of the questions off the top is going to be, well, the way I wrote it was, how did you get involved in para-athletics? And one Josh Watson said to me, did Patrick Anderson do track and field? I said, no, what I meant was like para-athletics as a whole. So in his mind, he sees that as para-sports, and I was looking at the broader para-athletics. So this is the beautiful thing about three different people reading the script, well, two ways, because I was outvoted by one Claire Buchanan as well, who said, yeah, I view this the same way. So that tells you exactly a little bit of what went on inside the walls here at the Neutral Zone, and you are indeed tuned in to the latest program. Let's bring in our co-host, one Josh Watson. Josh, how are you?
I am doing well, Brock. It was an exciting weekend of football and other sports as well. Lots to talk about, I'm sure. And a busy week coming up with the London Blizzard Invitational Sledge Hockey Tournament next weekend, where one of our guests, Stacey Quirk, is actually going to be competing in the C division. So perhaps I will get a chance to actually enjoy watching one of her games if the schedule works out properly. But I think my coach would prefer me to focus on my games first, so I'll do that.
Yeah. It's got to be, you know, you got to make the coaches happy.
Unfortunately, sometimes, yes.
Yes. Also, as I'm saying this, I'm like, are you also participating in the London Blizzards event as one Claire Buchanan, right?
Yes, I will also be there, yes, with the Durham Steelhawks. I'm in the B division, but yes, Josh, I am so excited to see a group of the Great Britons. They're competing for the first time. Some of them, that'll be their first games experiences. So it's going to be a fun weekend of hockey, and just also happy belated birthday, Brock.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes, I was joking with Mark Apollo, and I said, I woke up on Sunday morning and I was like, oh, this is what 32 feels like. And it was heartburn and indigestion that took a hold of me Sunday morning. So welcome to 32 life. That's
yeah,
what.
Yeah. Welcome.
Yeah. 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 Welcome to the age where you're going to start waking up and going, how did I sleep wrong?
Yeah, my back hurts just from sleeping 8 or 9 hours. What?
Yeah.
What?
Back, neck, shoulders. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, thank you very much. It was a great birthday weekend. I spent some time in Mississauga, and I played a little blackjack and came home with a little bit of extra money in the pocket, so I'm pretty excited about that. But it is time to get into our headlines for this week, so let's do it.
Neutral Zone headlines.
The Women's Under 18 Hockey Championships have come to an end, and Canada has gone back to back with gold with a win over Sweden with a 10-0 result. The bronze medal went to Team USA after they took the bronze medal with a 5-0 victory over Finland. It's great to see on both the men's side and the women's side that the game is closing the gaps, not between Canada and the U.S., but the rest of the world, too. So it's nice to see the growth of the sport outside of North America.
I honestly had to do an extra scroll and say to myself, did I read that right? It's Canada versus Sweden. And yes, in fact, it was. And congratulations, as you well point out. The Georgia Bulldogs won the College Bowl after they thumped TCU 65-7. This marks the second straight year they have won the championship. A lot of real avid college football fans say that this game was a disgrace. There was a social media video of a fan of the game really going off on college football and their decision making in this final. It's quite something to behold. Just Google it. Just put in crazy college fan and you'll be able to find it.
That was quite an epic video, I have to admit. An interesting situation could occur in the NFL playoffs this year. The NFL announced this week that because of the cancellation of the Week 18 game between the Cincinnati Bengals and the Buffalo Bills, there is a chance that the AFC Championship game could be played at a neutral site if the Bills end up meeting the Kansas City Chiefs. The neutral site that they chose? State Farm Stadium in Glendale, Arizona, which also happens to be the site of this year's Super Bowl. This means that the AFC champion could play back-to-back games at the same venue. I still don't quite understand how we got here, to be quite honest. I think there was a way that we could have gotten that Cincinnati-Buffalo game in if we massaged the schedule a little bit, but the NFL made its decision, and here we are. I don't know how I would feel if I was the NFC team, but this is where we find ourselves. The AFC champion could play back-to-back games at the same stadium.
Something that was brought to my attention recently on this was that why is this week's game between the Cincinnati Bengals and Buffalo Bills not being played at a neutral site? And the answer that I came up with, because if Cincinnati won that game, then they would have been ahead of the Buffalo Bills. The answer that I came up with, whether right, wrong, or indifference, was the following. That because the NFL feels that they gave the Cincinnati Bengals the win over the Baltimore Ravens with that game, they then won their division, which is the quote-unquote advantage for the Cincinnati Bengals. I happen to disagree. I also think this game should be played at a neutral site. Fair is fair. Those are your headlines for this week. Let's go back and take a look at our Twitter poll question from last week, which was, given the DeMar Hamlin incident, does that change your desire to watch football? 90% of you said no. 10% of you said yes. No votes were cast, for I'm still processing. Did you watch the Women's Under 18 Hockey Championship is this week's question. And your answers are yes, no, I didn't even know it was on. Cast your votes at our Twitter handle. Wait for it. Coming at you right now.
And welcome back to the Neutral Zone AMI broadcast booth.
Play ball!
And we are set to get this ball game underway. The first pitch brought to you by Brock Richardson's Twitter account at Neutral Zone BR. First pitch, strike. And hey, gang, why not strike up a Twitter chat with Claire Buchanan from the Neutral Zone? Find her at Neutral Zone CB. And there's a swing and a chopper out to second base right at Claire. She picks up the ball, throws it over to first base for a routine out. And fans, there is nothing routine about connecting with Cam and Josh from the Neutral Zone. At Neutral Zone, Cam J and at JWatson200. Now that's a winning combination. And this Oregon interlude is brought to you by AMI Audio on Twitter. Get in touch with the Neutral Zone. Type in at AMI Audio.
Our guest today is wheelchair basketball star Patrick Anderson. Patrick has been to 5 Paralympic Games, including the most recent games in Tokyo. He joins us now from New York to chat all about his wonderful career. Patrick, thanks so much for joining us today. It's lovely to have you on.
Thanks for having me. Nice to meet you guys. Except Claire, I should say. I know Claire. But nice to be there. How are you guys?
Great to meet you as well. Can we start by talking a little bit about how you got involved in parasport?
How did I get started in wheelchair basketball? So I wasn't born with a disability. I grew up playing hockey and all kinds of things. But when I was 9 years old, I was hit by a car. And I grew up in Fergus, Ontario, which is not that far from Kitchener-Waterloo. So just a year after my accident, I was invited to a wheelchair sports camp run by the Twin City Spinners. And I met some Paralympians like Jeff Penner and Bruce Russell, guys who ran the Spinners. And they identified me as a kid with some long arms and short legs and potential and passion for sports, and sort of took me under their wings, and I started playing, and I haven't really looked back.
One of the hardest things to do, really, in any aspect of life, but sport especially, is to have the longevity of your career be successful, and you've been able to consistently be successful with wheelchair basketball at 5 Paralympics. What is it about wheelchair basketball that has kept you so engaged for so long?
That's a good question. I can answer that in a number of different ways. But I mean, first thing that I would say about longevity is partly it speaks to just that foundation that I had. And I really am grateful and always have been to Jeff and Bruce in those first formative years. Those guys really made it fun, but also pushed me to develop those sort of foundational individual skills that the rest of my career was built upon when it came to like actually playing, learning how to play with other players and not only be the best player I could be, but get the most out of my teammates and play, you know, great 5-on-5 basketball. So part of it was that, like being set up with these sort of skill set, like not just my right hand, but my left hand, and being able to be a well-rounded basketball player and launch me sort of with that kind of skill set, I think just allowed me to enjoy the game on a level that, in a way that, you know, I don't know, that always made it, kind of kept it fun for me. And also, you know, I think they set me up also just to kind of enjoy the practice gym and like to continue working on things and getting better. And I think even though I've taken some breaks from playing competitively or like getting after it anyway, I've always sort of played, but playing for the national team, what's always kind of drawn me back and kept me focused in the gym is I enjoy practicing and I enjoy trying to get better. And I say that as a 43-year-old guy who has watched parts of his game just sort of slip away and just sort of wave as they go by. But but at the same time, it like kind of grudgingly making peace with that, but realizing that there's still other parts of my game, ball handling, finishing, communicating, these aspects of my game that I feel like maybe I'll be the last to know, but I feel like I can keep getting better. And I enjoy that, the craft of it. It's, you know, I love that about music. I love that about sports. Just, you put in the time and you'll pay, you'll see dividends, maybe not tomorrow, maybe not in a week, but eventually, and enjoy it. And that I really am grateful to Jeff and Bruce in those early years with the Twin City Spinners for, helping me learn how to enjoy that. That part of sport.
An athlete that enjoys practice. That might be a first for me. Now, you did mention that you did step away from the game for a little bit and then decided to make a return. I'm wondering if you can walk us through part of your decision making towards coming back to the game.
I could try. I don't know if I see the, you know, we always see these as maybe others from the outside, but as far as I could tell, We had a lot of success early on, and but it wasn't until 2006 when we'd won, you know, I'd won World Juniors, or we had won World Juniors, won the Paralympics twice at that point. We finally won the World Championships in 2006, and it was like a rubber band that had been stretched really tight suddenly snapped. And I didn't realize that that rubber band was quite so tight, but it was like I checked the last box off the list of like accomplishments, you know. And in some ways, my career is like divided between like before and after that moment. And so that was almost 20 years ago now, 15 years ago. And I'm still playing, I'm still on the national team. So I guess the difference is like, before that I felt like I had to play. Like it was like, this was just like the trajectory that my life was on. I didn't really have a choice about it. Neither did I want to. Like, this is what I did. I was a basketball player, this is what I do. This is the hub around which my life revolves. And ever since then, it's been more of a choice. It's like, do I want to do this? What am I getting out of this? What am I contributing to the sport? Is this the best thing for me? Is this the best thing for my family? It's been a little bit more of an intentional pursuit. And there's a good side of that and also challenging side to that. In 2008, we had a chance to kind of win our third gold medal in a row, and we just didn't quite get it done. We finished silver, and I finished second, got the silver, and I was just a little bit bitter about a lot of things. And it's just all me. The year before, I'd gone back to school and tried jazz guitar, and I'd gone from being like a highly acclaimed wheelchair basketball player to being like the 10th best guitarist in a class of 10. And that was sort of invigorating on one hand. It was also humbling. And so I enjoyed it for a while. But then when Beijing came around, I decided to go back to the team. But I sort of had one foot in and one foot out. And when we finished second, I just thought, I don't want to do this. I don't enjoy this. I'm in or out. And at that time, I was like, oh, I'm out. And I ended up sort of breaking my wrist, and the jazz guitar kind of got derailed. But long story short, when London rolled around again, I learned from that experience, and I took some time to think about like whether I wanted to play. I'd heard that the media attention around the London Games is going to be different this time, especially because like Channel 4 had sort of outbid the BBC, and they're like, BBC, you guys can have the Olympics. We want the Paralympics. So there was this new sort of energy around like broadcasting the Paralympics, and they're going to put on a great show. And I'm like, oh, they're going to put on the show. I need to be part of the show. But I did take a moment to really decide, am I going to be like one foot in, one foot out again, or am I going to be all in? And once my life had changed a little bit, I met my wife, we got married. I was like, am I really all in? But once I did, then, that sort of journey towards London was like really, it was hard, but it was, when we finally won in London, it was maybe the most gratifying. So that I answered more than you asked, but that's kind of what happened. And then after London, it was a similar thing. Like I took some time off, but then going into Rio, the coach wanted to know kind of well ahead of time, like what my plans were. And I took some time to think about it. And by that point, my wife and I started making music together, and that's just what my passion was. So I said, no, not for this one. I left the door open intentionally because I knew I wasn't like retiring, but we decided to make some music, and lo and behold, we made some kids too. That wasn't really the plan, but that happened too. And so we were making stuff. So I took a little break and sat out the Rio quad, but then came back after Rio.
Seeing all that growth, doing so well both on the women's side and the men's side during that time, and then seeing that shift of how the Paralympics were viewed through the media and how much exposure they were getting. During that time, what do you think the biggest growth of the games has been from then till now?
It's hard to say about like the games in general, like it's such a big thing. My favorite games were Sydney and London, which sort of bookend my medal winning any part of my career. Hopefully not when all is said and done, but from 2012. But I think on the court, just to sort of narrow maybe the question down, if you don't mind, like the game has gotten like, I don't know that like the peakiest parts of the game have changed that much. Like what I mean by that is like the best players that I can think of from like 96, 98, 2000, I think those guys would still be absolute rock stars in the game right now. But I think like everybody has gotten better. So I don't know that the ceiling's gotten higher, but the floor has certainly come up. And specifically, I think with chair skills, I think one of the reasons that we had such success is we were early. Same with the women, I think too, before us, that we were fast all the way through our lineup, at least, you know, the lineups that gap teams, and that's changed in a really cool way. It's made the game. I remember we were in Japan a couple of years ago and I was watching Japan against Great Britain. Japan against Australia. Same thing happened in Tokyo watching the semifinal game, Tokyo, Japan and Great Britain. And I was just like, man, oh man, this is exciting. All 10 guys in the court can push their butts off. And it was up and down. The chair skills were sort of out of this world. And the basketball skill too. Probably the level has come up, the floor has come up. But all that to say, I'm like, I want to get back on the podium with these guys, but at the same time, I can kind of take my like athlete hat on and put my fan hat on sometimes and be like, man, the sport is in a good place on those days when you see two teams like that square off. So, and I imagine that's mirrored in some of the other sports too. But that's a little bit of speculation, but yeah, basketball it's in some ways, like I said, similar. Some of those stars from the bygone era would still be stars today, but overall, I think everyone's more competitive, and you see that in the results. They it's not the same three or four teams winning medals. It's we're going down to in Paris is only going to be 8 men's teams and 8 women's teams, which is in a sense too bad because there's so many, there's going to be so many great teams that don't even qualify for the Paralympics in 2024. And you couldn't really say that in 2000. You'd say like, well, there's 5 or 6 good teams here and then some other teams that are okay. But now you're just scratching and clawing just to qualify for the Paralympics. Anyway, was that answer long enough for you, or would you like me to keep talking?
Hey, we're here for all the information you want to spit out.
It's less work for you guys, right? If I just pull out of your own.
Now, with the positives, we always have to talk about the flip side. Is there anything that you can think of that could be improved with either the game or the Paralympic experience itself?
I don't know. Wheelchair basketball and the IPC, we had a little bit of a public spat over the last few years, and some athletes who had been eligible for the Paralympics under sort of a minimal disability category were uninvited to the Paralympics. And without getting into the weeds of like why the IPC felt like they had to do that, it did feel like kind of a move in the opposite direction from what I think serves everybody best, which is to be more open, to find a playing more open sort of framework and paradigm to include more people into the sport. And that comes from being a Canadian and growing up in a system where we allow able-bodied people to play. We've figured out this classification system that makes it fair. So once I sit down, we all sit down in our chairs. It's a fair fight. And I've benefited from that personally, I think, as an athlete. I think our Canadian national team and our success, it's not an accident that we succeeded when we did, because I think we had all these able-bodied players as teammates and as opponents and as coaches really pushing us and helping us, and when I think about our Paralympic medals that we won, I don't think it's just the disabled athletes in Canada, it's those able-bodied athletes that that helped us get there. So yeah, I find that a little unfortunate, sort of a move towards kind of really closely identifying or very like kind of tightly identifying disability and these sort of these silos. And if you don't fit in them, you don't fit in the Paralympics. In a sense, I understand why they have to do that. And the Paralympics is an enormous sporting event, and you kind of have to, they're the ones who are determining who's eligible and who's not. And that's not an easy task. I don't mean to suggest that it is, but I find that a little bit unfortunate, and it cuts out some people who otherwise are wonderful athletes and ambassadors for the sport. And now they're on the outside looking in. I think it's the wrong direction, but
we're joined by Patrick Anderson, who is a 5-time Paralympic athlete in the sport of wheelchair basketball. You're listening to the Neutral Zone. I'm joined by Claire Buchanan and Josh Watson.
I can only imagine what your trophy room looks like if you do have one, but one of your most recent awards was you were inducted into the Center Wellington Hall of Fame. Can you talk a little bit about that medal or award specifically and kind of what it means to you?
I grew up in I didn't have a disability growing up, and so I play hockey and play against a lot of great athletes, and to kind of bubble up out of that town, it just means a lot. I know a lot of athletes that haven't, one of my best friends played collegiate volleyball, and I'm very, very connected still with my hometown, and my parents and some of my siblings still live there, and it's a real honor. And actually in the spring, one of my good friends in his class, he's a teacher in his classmates, they advocated to have the town put up like home of Patrick Anderson signs. But because that's like a provincial thing, it ended up being like kind of the signs were moved sort of closer in town anyway, but they got approval for it. And so these signs went up, and so I was home in the spring. And, so I was going to drive back to Fergus for like an awards thing. And right after the end of my training camp in Toronto, and the very last shift of the very last day of camp, like 10 minutes before the end of practice, I fell and broke my wrist. But I was like, we got to make this thing. All these people are showing up. you know, so I put it in a sling or whatever, and we went, and I gave this little speech, and all my, you know, friends and family were there, like the ones that had been with me the whole time. And I found myself talking to all these people that weren't there that I remembered. And to the point of like, some of my friends were like, you talked about that guy from grade eight. I'm like, I'm standing right here. Like, what about, are you supposed to thank your best friends for helping you get there? And I'm like, yeah, but I'm sorry. I sort of took you guys for granted because you're standing here in front of me. But all this long story to say, like, I just found myself thinking about all these people that I played like basketball with on the playground, whether I was on my knees or on my legs or on my chair. Like, I was just always trying to be an athlete in town and be around other people. And I was thinking about some of them, even though they weren't there at the ceremony necessarily. And just all that to say, I really feel like a part of that community, past and present, and hopefully future. And so the Hall of Fame, the sign, it's a real honor. And yeah, I hope the town feels half as much warmth or whatever pride as I feel in the town and that community.
Now, as athletes, there's always seems to be a point where we look back at our careers and sort of say, that was the starting point. That was the thing that kind of drove me to do what I've done. You were named back-to-back basketball junior world championship MVP in 1997 and then again in 2001. I'm curious, was that the point in your career, albeit early, where you knew this could be something you're good at, or does it go earlier or later than that?
Yeah, it's probably the most humble thing to say, but I maybe knew that already. People have been pumping my tires for a while. That I was good, but it's interesting that you asked that, just because those are two very different inflection points in my career, even though they sound similar, like World Juniors. But in 97, it was the first World Juniors, and it really feel like the launching of a ship. You know, it wasn't just me. Joey Johnson was there, who was there, you know, who we played years together with, and he's just a legend of the national team, and some other guys. Bo Hedges was there. Anyway, it felt like the start of something for sure. And the fact that it was in Toronto was extra special. 4 years later, though, in Brazil, like, we had won a Paralympics, you know, in 2000. And I felt like I was this guy with a stature in the sport internationally and a big target on my back. And everyone was coming after me. And it felt like a much more kind of serious, grown up, kind of like dog eat dog kind of thing. And so pulling that out felt amazing. Like, it really was one of the most hot house environments I've ever played in Brazil, with like thousands of people just screaming me down and wanting like blood. You know, I'm like, well, this is fun. This is what being an athlete, I think, is supposed to feel like at times, being in another, you know, the other team's rink or the other team's stadium. And so for that reason, that's super memorable. But yeah, I guess I do. I've benefited from having some success early on and feeling like that's, you know, success in some ways breeds success, and felt like it was something to definitely build on. It gave me confidence and a lot of pride that, no, Canada, you know, was really planting our flag. Like I mentioned, the women really, I think, showed us it was possible in the 90s for a little country like Canada. It was always kind of hanging around, to not only just hang around or win a medal, but be the flag bearers, be the pointy edge, be the team that everyone else was chasing. I think they really gave us that belief. And then when we started achieving that ourselves, it's pretty intoxicating. Something that we talk about longevity is something that's still with me now. Like, people know who I am and come after me. And I enjoy being, trying to be the rabbit that other people are chasing. I think that's something that both gives me joy and I find fun. And also I feel like it's something I can give to the sport and kind of push people and give them someone to chase. To the degree that's true still in my 40s, I don't know, but it doesn't matter. I still enjoy doing it, and I think I'm sort of gratified by it.
You talk about all the check marks that you got, all the boxes you got to check. Gold medal, check.
Right.
MVP, check. What do you have desired to accomplish now? What do you have, what boxes are unchecked for you?
Oh, millions and millions of dollars.
Through music or sport? Or
that's okay. Oh, I don't care. The lottery. I came back after Rio because I really like these guys. I'm playing with some of my old buddies, but also some young guys who weren't part of those teams like 2012 and before. And I want to win with those guys because I like them. I respect them, and we have a good thing going. But we are, you know, a middle of the pack team that could break either way for us. I would just love to win with those guys. It would mean something a little bit different than those past medals, especially given in 2022 or 2024. It's never been harder, I don't think, to get on the podium. So there's that. And I don't know if you call it an accomplishment, but whether it's next year or in 2 years or 5 or 10, like finding a way to just give back to the sport and kind of share it with people. And it's not a matter of repaying a debt that I owe the sport, but just out of love for the sport and the community to contribute. I don't really know what that looks like, but just to contribute to the health and vibrancy of the sport would feel like a real accomplishment when that time comes. But for now, I'm just trying to train and make ends meet and raise three kids with my daughter or with my wife and make some music and stuff like that. But an album, that would be another accomplishment. Were we talking about basketball or just general life goals?
Well, you know, what boxes do you have to check?
I've been very fortunate, and I hope that I hope that along the way that I've people who've supported me along the way kind of know how much that they've meant to me in our sport, because it definitely doesn't happen alone.
Well, I mean, as a fan of your music for quite a while, I mean, I wouldn't mind another album coming out either.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll get to work. My wife's got some coming out. She just released a song, yeah. Anna Paddock. I'm going to plug it. Normally record together, but she recorded a few songs about our daughter, our youngest daughter, who was born a few years ago and has her own disability story. That she has something called Bardet-Biedl syndrome, which is a genetic disorder that meant her birth was very sort of dramatic in early life, and she's certain manifestations over the course of her life. So it's sort of interesting being on that side of it, of disability now, and just it's not 100% clear how it will be manifested in her life going forward. But, you know, she has some developmental delays with speech and mobility and stuff like that. And so now I'm the parent of somebody with a disability and walking alongside her. And anyway, these songs that my wife has written and recorded are just, to me, amazing. But I'm a little too close to it to be an objective
a little biased.
Check out Anna Paddock. Anyway.
Yeah. Hey, Patrick, you know, the thing that we've done a ton of interviews doing this, and we've just started on the, you know, video podcast realm. And the thing you sometimes get with athletes is you get the, you know, conventional answer. I've done my thing. I'm happy with it. And I have to say, sitting here as a producer and host of this program, your honesty, you made us all smile, laugh at one point or another in this interview. We really greatly appreciate you coming on and talking to us about all your points in life, and best of luck with all of your success. And once again, thank you so much for joining us, and we will have you back on again down the line very soon.
Sounds great. Absolutely my pleasure. You guys have a great day. Good to see you, Claire.
That was Patrick Anderson, who is a 5-time Paralympic athlete in the sport of wheelchair basketball, talking to us all about his career. If you like what you have heard, here's how you can get a hold of us by voicemail.
If you want to leave a message for the Neutral Zone, call now. 1-866-509-4545. And don't forget to give us permission to use your message on the air. Let's get ready to leave a voicemail!
Mario DeLille has been recently named the High Performance Director at Bocce Canada, and I recently sat down with him at the Canadian Bocce National Championships, but due to some technical challenges with that interview, we're going to recycle it now. He has recently come back with his team from World Championships, and he's here to tell us about his role and World Championships. Mario, thanks so much for joining us on this video form.
Thank you for having me, Brad.
We have had the opportunity to speak with you a couple of times in your role as coach for the national bocce team. Now we get the pleasure of speaking to you as the high performance director. Can you give us an idea of what that means or what that change is?
Well, that means I'm now in charge of the, you know, of the whole high performance program as a whole. Obviously, and more specifically, I am responsible for planning and delivery of the program. I have to provide leadership and guidance to everyone, but specifically now, coaching team and the team of specialists. I'm not as much with the athletes that I was in the past in this role. I've part of my responsibility, a lot of it is also to be a liaison with Institut National du Sport, where we have our training center. Also, all the sport in Canada, Sport Canada, the Canadian Paralympic Committee, CCS for anti-doping, all of this is now my priority.
And I spoke with you, as I mentioned on the intro, in London, Ontario, which is the national championships. And we discussed at that event that this is primarily an event for provincial coaches and the provincial programs. Can you explain how your role differs there today as it would have, you know, back when you were the head coach?
On the high performance side, we are using the Canadian Championship for selection purpose, okay, mostly. So this event is by the end of the year, and it's a great occasion to update our list of potential athletes. Okay, so for the national team, for the Espoir team now since last year. So my role, most of my role during the championship is taking notes, doing the game analysis, okay, to make sure athletes are doing what we are looking for. Obviously video, okay, because we can't be on each court always, so the videoing the game is very important for further observation. Taking some picture make sure, you know, we are looking at the right athletes for the upcoming events, right? So confirming athletes' potential for international play basically is what we are looking for. And this is what I was doing at the Canadian Championship this year.
A lot of detail goes into selecting a national championship team, as well as being successful while you're at national championships. And in your point of view, what defines success at a tournament such as national championship?
Well, I mean, but yeah, it's a sport where athletes are not in action every week, right? Like some sports. So there's a tournament here and there during the year. So success at this level does not necessarily means winning all games, right? In Butcha, there's a lot to consider, and success at this stage is mostly related to the quality of the equipment. I'm going to say the capacity to work with it, right? Because you can have some great, you know, ball, a great ramp, you know, a great wheelchair to play the game, but the athletes are still in development, basically, when they come to the Canadian Championship. So capacity to work with your equipment, generate consistency in shot is a necessary, you know, something we're looking at and something they need to focus on. You know, having a great performance partner is also very important, and good coaching is an important aspect that we look as well for continuous progression. A performance partner, by the way, is someone that accompany the athlete in Butchie for most classification. And in some, it's necessary for that person to be on the court with the athlete. They actually have a role to play. So that communication needs, that relationship and communication with that person needs to be at very, very good, right? So we're looking at that.
When you go to an event like national championships, you obviously have your eye on specific athletes, but what happens if there's an athlete that you weren't necessarily targeting coming into the event and they really surprise you? Does the selection process allow for you to consider that individual beyond the athletes you were previously targeting?
Yeah, I'm going to say it depends on the year, okay? Because we obviously we're a Paralympic sport, and we're you know, the I'm going to say beside World Championship, Paralympic game every cycle is kind of the you know, the top thing where you think what that you aim, right? Paralympic game, and in some years, like this year, for example, 2023, by the end of this year, we have to have the as many athletes in good position in ranking, right? Because the qualification for the game is December 31st. So we were limited in the past in competition, but there is more competition we can go to now. And you know, to answer your question, it's always great for us to see new talent. Okay, we're looking for that, right? That's one reason we go to the championship every year to see not only the new talent, but those who were new the year before or 2 years ago, right? How have they, you know, where they have bring their game now is always very, very nice. So so considering the calendar, considering the qualification for the game, and in order, you know, to have more athletes in the pipeline, we're now we have created an espoir team, and it's mostly there that now the athletes are developing. So this year championship was an example. We see at least two athletes that we'd never seen before, and it was great. I mean, we had great discussion, so these athletes were not selected this year, but might be next year, right? We're looking forward to that.
You touch on development a lot, and it's brought you success in bringing back to Boccia Canada the development team. Can you touch on the impact that has on growing the game and future generations of athletes in the sport?
Yeah, the espoir team. What we were finding out is that on the national team, we used to have, you know, 16 athletes in the past. We're now limiting to 10, and these athletes are the one we're aiming for, you know, for the bigger competition during the year. So the creating that espoir group, you know, they're the next generation of athletes, right? They usually are not ready for the bigger event, but we want to make sure we are providing training guidance, of course, right? We're making sure these athletes are training the way they should. And we want to have an high performance coach around them, you know, for the year. When I say around, unfortunately, it's not at every practice, and it's not in the same city. We don't have the capacity. But you know, phone communication, internet now, where we can actually be on the court with some athletes sometimes while, you know, at distance. So really looking forward to bring these athletes to the next stage. And I've mentioned it earlier. There are some events now that we can go to that are for more the development event. So the goal is to send these espoir athletes to at least one challenger event. We call this a challenger event. At least one during the year to get them to prepare them for the bigger event, which are sometimes very stressful.
We're joined by Mario DeLille, who is the High Performance Director at Boccia Canada, and he's giving us a rundown of his role in national championships. And I'm your host, Brock Richardson, and I'm alongside Claire Buchanan and Josh Watson.
You recently came back with the national program from World Championships. Can you chat a little bit about that event from a generic perspective?
It's pretty much incredible how Boccia, the sport of Boccia, is developing in the world. There's every year we see more events for 6 to 8 years. Of course, COVID was we were hit by COVID as well, like everyone. We couldn't compete for some time, but it was great to see the World Championship this year after 4 years. The event was big. It was 40 nations. So the International Federation is now there's more than 60 countries that is part of the, you know, of the sport, but 40 nations made it to the World Championship. That's for 169 athletes. So It was a great event. It was big. Okay, the mini hotel needed to be used, and when we say 169 athletes overall, we're talking about more than 300 people that that participate overall. So it was great to be in Rio. The heat was was a challenge. The heat and the humidity. We have athletes that have specific affected with heat some, so we needed to have backup plans for to manage the heat over there. But it was great, a great individual event followed by the pair event. We were able to have good performance from many Canadian. Most of the team, I had 8 athletes over there, and 6 out of 8 made it to the next round. So they did the pool. So they win most of their game in pool and made it to the next round. Unfortunately, at that round, we lost. Four of them. So only 2 of them were able to go further away. So our best ranking was a 4th position in the BC4 class. So we played for a medal in the individual portion of the event, and then on the team and pair portion of the event, we made it to the end with our BC4 pairs. Actually, we made it to the bronze game. So lost the semifinal game against Slovakia, number 1 in the world, but we were able to beat Japan for bronze. So we're very happy coming back with a medal, because it's a challenge to win medal in these events now.
Absolutely, it is for sure. Mario, it's always a pleasure for me to have you on the program. And I've got to be honest, for the listener that doesn't know, who might be new to our video podcast specifically, Mario was my coach for about 7 years on the national program. And so him and I have a special relationship, and it's so wonderful to see the sport grow, and it's good to have you on our program as always.
I remember these events along with you, Brock. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, thank you so much. That was Mario DeLille, who is the High Performance Director at Bocce Canada and formerly my head coach for many, many years. Okay, as we finish up the Neutral Zone podcast for another day, we've got about 5 minutes remaining, and we don't often do 2 interviews back-to-back, but we were able to do that today. And one of the things that Patrick Anderson mentioned in the first block of the interview, which is the thing that I want to touch on with both of you, is that, being sports, involved in sports, is kind of like an elastic band. And he mentioned that elastic band sort of gave way, and that's sort of the point to which he felt he needed to step away. But then as time went on, he realized he wanted to go back. And I know for me personally, I had that same sort of feeling, and I can relate very much to exactly what he's saying. I had such a passion for bocce for years and years and years. I ate, sleep, and breathe bocce all the time, and it was just my existence. It was my life, and I heard that very much from Patrick as well, and it's sort of interesting to see that the drive took him back into the game and back to the Paralympic Games, whereas I went back to bocce and it did not go very well at all for me. So I'm curious to your thoughts on the whole sort of that band telling you maybe it's time to let go here, but then the drive to come back. Claire, start with you.
I know exactly what that feeling feels like. I had a similar, maybe not a similar situation with also wheelchair basketball. I got to a place where I feel like I had accomplished and gotten to where I was going to get in the sport. I won national championships in college and got to be in the national team program for over a decade and travel and compete with the Canada jersey on. But all at one time, I got back into para hockey and had a child all at the same time. So I really felt that band stretch when I was doing basketball and hockey and being a new mom all at once. And I really had to take the time to think of, do I want to let this band go and really release it and kind of move on from basketball? And I ended up making that decision and seeing how I could put my skills and my effort and see what kind of impact I could have with para hockey. And it's I miss wheelchair basketball, yes, and I it's a great sport and I loved playing it, but at the same time I'm so glad that I am fully diving headfirst and all in, as Patrick touched on as well, with the women's team and growing that sport.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a different situation, I guess, for me, in that I haven't been at a national level necessarily, at least when it comes to para hockey. To a degree, I guess I have reached that with track and field, in that I have been to national championships, and that is very exciting. But I would say I'm probably going through that right now, where I'm at a point where my job is what it is, and I have a new relationship, and I have to decide, okay, what do I want to do and what do I not want to do? And that does make it a bit challenging. So it's going to be an interesting road to wheel down, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure. And it's tough, you know, when you have to get to that point to where you're like, what do I do? And I mean, I had months and months and months of discussion with people, and it wasn't like a shock to people that I left sports. You know, it was sort of something that people knew was coming. And so when Patrick earlier said you know, the elastic sort of hit and sort of said, you know, here we go, that's sort of when it gets tough. And I wanted to bring that in closing of today's show and, you know, bring that all together. That is the end of our show for this week. I'd like to thank Josh Watson, Claire Buchanan. I'd also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Flolo. Our podcast coordinator is Ryan Delahanty. Tune in next week, because you just never know what happens when you enter the neutral zone. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next week.